Hello, beauties. You are listening to the Beauty of the Nile podcast. I'm your host, Jasmine Mobley. The Beauty of the Nile podcast is your source for wonderful skincare tips, favorite skincare solutions, amazing advice, great conversation, and fabulous beauty inspiration, specifically for women of color from the experts on skin of color. We are here to affirm and amplify the beauty of brown skin in all shades, and to encourage women of color to care for and love our brown skin. We believe that skincare is healthcare and self-care. Each episode features a different guest who will be dropping dimes to help you best care for and love your brown skin. I'm excited to be here with you. Let's get started. Today, I'm here with Andrea Navarro. Andrea is a writer and editor based in Los Angeles with over 7 years of experience. Her areas of expertise are beauty, women's lifestyle content, and shopping trend reports. She's written for several major publications, including Glamour, Teen Vogue, The Zoe Report, and more. Andrea also has experience helping brands with marketing and social media copywriting needs. She is a force in the beauty industry and definitely one to continue to watch. Andrea, welcome to the Beauty of the Nile podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about beauty, so this is definitely right up my alley. I feel like we're going to have a great conversation.
We are. It's going to be fun. So I know for everybody who's listening, you are a beauty and lifestyle writer and editor. You're very talented, and I'd love to kind of take it back for people and talk a little bit about when you got into writing and how you knew this was the right spot for you.
Yeah, so it actually started at a very young age. When people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I never said that I wanted to be a writer, but it was always my best subject in school. I was like acing every essay, paper you can imagine. I was winning awards for like English and literature and things of that nature, even all the way back to elementary school. And the person who pointed that out for me was actually my mom, where she was like, I kind of knew that you would always end up down this path one way or another. She's like, you know, when you were in second grade, I remember you won like your fifth writing award. And I was like, okay, like this kid needs to figure out something in that space because it's clearly what she's good at. You know, I definitely was always like, oh, you know, I want to be a lawyer or something like that, just to play it safe. But I kind of always knew that it was definitely the right direction for me. It's always come naturally. And people are always shocked when I tell them that because they're like, oh no, like writing is so hard. Like it's not second nature to me at all. And I'm like, for me, it's definitely the case. Like I can write quickly, clean, like witty copy. It doesn't matter the assignment, like definitely could adapt to like all these different voices, especially for all like the different brands that I've written for. So yeah, I think I definitely had it in me since I was a kid, but I didn't necessarily know that this is where I would end up.
That's awesome. And I love that your mom encouraged you, because you talked about like saying maybe you wanted to be a lawyer. And I feel like a lot of parents would be like, okay, yeah, go ahead and do that and not
absolutely
circle back.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, minority parents and immigrant parents, they definitely have that nature of them where they're like, maybe you have to be a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. But thankfully, my parents were very encouraging about the creative route. So definitely grateful to them for that.
Yeah, that's so great. And look where it ended up. So they're probably like proud of themselves.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And okay, so it probably is hard to choose. It's probably like asking you, you know, if you had a favorite child, if you were a parent, but do you have a favorite piece that you've ever written or worked on? You can name a few if you want.
Yeah, I would say one of my favorite pieces that I worked on, it was a first person essay for the Zoe Report where I explained why I stopped relaxing my hair. It was, you know, a big journey for me from like being a young girl up until womanhood, where I always felt like my hair was my security blanket. And I felt the pressure to, you know, get perms and relaxers when I was younger to fit into like all these different societal standards. But then I moved to LA and I just felt that there was so much individuality here. And I saw so many more women of color really owning who they were. And I was like, why am I putting myself through this like pain and all these chemicals like every month? And it's obviously like a big financial investment as well, along with the time commitment. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to try to take the natural route. So it was definitely inspiring that they let me do it in the first place, because I wasn't sure if the site necessarily had the audience for that, but they were more than willing to, like, you know, let me say my piece. And yeah, it was a pretty long essay dating back all the way up until my childhood experiences up until now, and kind of like embracing natural hair and learning, you know, how to strain it on my own if I felt like it, experimenting with like weaves and wigs and things of that nature. So that's definitely one of my favorite ones. But, you know, I've been very lucky as well to just have the chance to interview so many different inspiring people like Nicole Kidman, Kim Kardashian, and so many different like high profile celebrities like Rihanna. So those have always been like obviously big winners in my book. But if it came to, you know, like sharing something personal that I'm proud of, it would definitely be that first piece about my natural hair.
Yeah, that could be probably an entire other podcast episode. I'll just bring you back and talk about that. But do you remember, I mean, for anybody who hasn't read it yet, but we can link it in the show notes too, so people can read it afterwards. But for anybody who hasn't read that article yet, can you talk a little bit about, did you take people through like your emotional journey? Like what was it like emotionally for you to make that choice?
Yes, I definitely did. I even went back to how emotional it was for me as a child, just like, you know, going to the salon, sitting there. I remember being physically like in pain, but then I also remember being in pain if my mom tried to like detangle my hair at home. So just all these flashbacks were coming back to me as I wrote it that pretty much solidified that I had made the right decision. And I also like dove into how nowadays there, I just have so many more product options. Like all women of color do for our hair. Back in the day, like, you know, we were stuck using the same detangling sprays and things for everyone with fine hair that necessarily wouldn't work for us, or we had to make our own concoctions of different products and spend so much more money than people who didn't have hair like ours. And like one thing that stood out to me a lot, it was before I even wrote the piece, it was that Black women spend the most on beauty products, and it's simply because they just didn't have things for them. So they were forced to buy more things to put together a product, whether it be a foundation shade or a leave-in conditioner or anything of that nature. And it was very shocking to me because it was something that I unsurprisingly like never realized before. So that was definitely a statistic that stood out to me before I went ahead and made the decision. So yeah, I dove into like a bunch of different avenues to get it into like the right place.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy hearing you say that, but it makes sense. Like for so long with it, whether it's skincare or makeup or hair care, there's so many products that, you know, haven't been created with us in mind, or, you know, aren't really for you. They're just kind of like a one size fits all. Right. So it makes sense why so many women of color are like mixing concoctions in their kitchen, because that is better than like putting something that you can't trust, made by people who you maybe don't trust on your hair, your skin, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. So, I mean, it's kind of obvious actually listening to you talk, but I wonder if you, there was a moment that you knew like what your niche would be as a writer, like, did you know that beauty and lifestyle were it for you immediately, or was it trial and error?
So it was definitely a bit of trial and error, because I always thought that I wanted to be a fashion editor. Once I kind of like was in college and doing internships, I really thought I wanted to take the fashion route. So when I was in college, I studied PR and advertising, but I lived in New Jersey during the summer, so I was able to, you know, just hop on a train, go to New York and do internships. And I was doing a lot of PR internships, and that kind of taught me that I wanted to be on the other side of things as an editor. So I was like, okay, let me switch gears here and try out like some more editorial things and whatnot. But what solidified it for sure was my last internship ever. I was interning at New York Fashion Week, but I was under a beauty team. And I just saw like all the different clients that they worked with. And I was like, okay, these are like more like household names that I recognize. And I don't know, I kind of liked like the culture behind all of them, and then getting to know the science behind beauty. So when I hopped over and got my first like real job at Teen Vogue, I was writing content for like all the different verticals, but I made a real connection with our beauty editor at the time. So she was assigning me the most stuff. And then eventually, after a couple of months, I was promoted to be like the first digital beauty writer for the site in-house, like as part of in-house staff. And that kind of kickstarted the whole thing. I really, really enjoyed it and got into it. I didn't expect it. I really thought that I was like a fashion girl through and through, but I just felt so much more connected to people in the beauty space and other beauty editors and writers. I felt that there was a lot more diversity in beauty as well. So felt more comfortable attending beauty events and getting to know people in that space versus fashion, which obviously has evolved a little bit since, but still, I think that really was, I just felt like the community was more welcoming for me, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, because they're at least trying to pretend, at least at the very minimum, pretend that they care about diversity. Yeah, I think that I can imagine. Okay, so when somebody reads your work, whether it's about beauty or lifestyle or whatever you're writing about that day, what do you hope that they leave with, like a feeling or something?
Yeah, I hope that they feel included and seen. That's definitely number one for me. I try to make sure that all my content speaks to people of all different backgrounds, people with different budgets, people with different tastes. So that's number one for me. But I also operate like on the basis of I'm providing a service. So as long as someone does feel inclined to learn more about a brand that I'm covering or a product that I'm covering, and they come back to me and they're like, oh, I'm so glad that I bought this because of your article, that's like definitely my second biggest goal for sure.
Those are really, really good ones. And I feel like that's actually how I first found you. Like I realized, you know, you just like read articles and sometimes you don't know who you're reading them from.
Yeah.
And then I realized I was getting so many recommendations or things that I love from you. And I was like, I have to find her and follow her. So that's like, I think you accomplished that goal. But I also think it's really important for women of color, women of all different like backgrounds, to be able to see somebody who like they can trust, who they feel like really did their due diligence and maybe has similar hair type or skin type or whatever to theirs. And like, you know, whatever they try isn't going to make them look or feel crazy. Yeah. So I think that's really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that means a lot.
Let's take a quick break here. Since you're listening, I want to make sure that you have access to all of the great Beauty of the Nile content. Make sure you're subscribed to the Beauty of the Nile newsletter. Of course, it's free. Just head on over to beautyofthenile.com. Enter your email to subscribe. It's super quick and easy. You can do it now. We'll be right here when you get back. Enjoy.
Can you talk about, for anybody who doesn't know, when you get a new product that you get, you know, somebody sends you a product or for work, you're reviewing it. Can you talk about your process for kind of deciding what you want to write about?
Yeah, of course. So for me, if it's a brand that I'm already familiar with, I'm like, okay, great. This is awesome. I can always have it like on the back of my mind to include it in something later, even if it's not appropriate for like right now, let's say, which happens a lot. Like I'll get a lot of things sent to me in the mail and I'm like, okay, I'm not covering like deep conditioners anytime soon. But I know once winter comes around and we're looking for a little bit more hydration, then that I can keep in mind for, I keep it in my back pocket for when the time comes. Second, I also look for, you know, who the founders are. Like if I get a pitch that states like, oh, you know, like a new dermatologist has launched something or this professor has finally like put their expertise into, you know, launching their own product, I keep that in mind as well, because like you said, you want it to be from someone that you can trust and actually has experience and not just someone like plastering their name on something because they can. And then, you know, if it is like something by a high profile figure, like a celebrity, I definitely will try it for a couple of weeks, let's say, to see and give my honest opinion, like whether or not it should be covered. Because the truth is, like a lot of them are great products and a lot of these people do know what they're talking about. But, you know, it's honestly such a saturated market that it takes a lot of time and effort to be able to test everything. So, you know, as much as I wish I could, I simply can't. But yeah, I think it really is all in the art of the pitch. Like if the pitch gets my attention, then I'm definitely keeping it in mind for later. And if I request a sample for something, I definitely like make sure that, you know, I give them some coverage as soon as I can or even like later on, because I never want it to be like, oh, I requested this and I had absolutely no intentions of even discussing it either. So yeah, it's like a bit of a mixed process, but I think it really all does fall back on the pitch process as well.
Yeah. And I think that's really honest. And I always did wonder for years, I wondered like if all my beauty editor friends actually put all those things on their faces. I was always very curious. And I was curious like how that would impact your skin. So it's good to know, like you have a winnowing down process.
Yeah.
Cause that would be, you'd be really sacrificing a lot, especially like if you tried everything, you know, and you just never know what people are putting in things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like it's also easier to know if there's things that I'm not going to try right off the bat as well. Cause I'm like, okay, I know this is not going to work for my hair by any means, just simply off the description. So I might not cover it from a first person angle, but you know, let's say if I am highlighting something like, you know, the best purple shampoos for blonde hair, like, okay, I got this. I know I can like learn more about it later, talk to an expert, do a deep dive from there and figure it out. But yeah, when it comes to trying things myself, I definitely have to be like more considerate of like my skin type, my hair type, like, you know, shade range and all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite a lot of things to consider. Okay. That's really, really interesting. Okay. On the topic of trying products, and skin, what would you say are your biggest skin concerns, if you have any?
Yeah. So for me, I struggled a bit with cystic acne in my early 20s. So that was a big one for me. I didn't have acne as a teenager. I had like great skin throughout high school and college. But then as soon as I went back to New York after graduating college and did like my first job, my skin was breaking out like I had never seen it before. And I didn't understand what was happening. So I had to go to a dermatologist and they were like, this is definitely just hormonal acne. We have to get like, you know, things balanced out a little bit. So with like the right treatments and, you know, I did have to take some medication for that to get that under control. But then another thing I also have is hyperpigmentation. So, you know, darker skin tones respond to injury with more injury. So if we pick at a pimple and we get a scar, it's only going to get darker just naturally by how our body responds to it. So I've had to kind of manage getting like brightening products and things of that nature to work on evening out my skin tone, because I've definitely struggled with dark spots, especially, you know, along the chin area from that cystic acne. It like, they take so long to go away if you don't treat them properly.
Yeah, it's so true. I feel like they come immediately and they can, like if you don't have the right products or you don't know what you're doing, like they don't just go away on their own.
Right, right, yeah.
It's actually very annoying.
Yeah, no, it's very, very annoying.
Yeah, they're my biggest enemy. Okay, so I'm sure as an editor, you get to try a lot of different like treatments, facials, things like that. Do you try or have you tried any of those things to address some of these skin concerns?
Yeah, so one that I tried that I really liked was Clear and Brilliant. It's like a laser facial and it works on like exfoliating the skin to get rid of like all that dead skin, and then of course target those dark spots to brighten and like just basically like a reset. I'm a big fan of that. It is quite the investment. So it's not something that unfortunately is like accessible to everyone. But I'm a big fan of chemical peels. Even at home peels are great. There are some great like medical grade peels that you can do right in the comfort of your own home to like, you know, just give your skin that reset that it needs. And you know, cell turnover for just like brightening and getting rid of all that dead skin and those dark spots. So I would say those two are like my favorite. And then I've done, you know, some like LED treatments as well, which are great to do at home. You can just get yourself like a LED mask. They're really affordable, like on Amazon, and kind of just really like give yourself a spa day at home and treat yourself with that.
I love that. Those are really good recommendations. I've tried two out of the three. So I need to tack on the last one. Those are great ones. Okay. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about, you know, like our experiences and kind of our journey with our skin and how we felt about it. So would love to know, have you ever seen or experienced colorism in your life? And if so, I'd love to just hear from you how it's affected your perceptions of beauty and how it's made you feel.
Oh yeah, of course. I think for me, the first time that I experienced colorism, like on a personal level, was in college. I went to, you know, a predominantly white institution. So diversity was just not a huge thing there. And, you know, of course I had like my groups of friends and, you know, we all looked the same, but I realized like certain looks or certain questions, I would get a lot of people asking me like, what are you? Like, and I'm like, what do you mean? So I got that question very often throughout college. But I never experienced like, you know, blatant racism or anything of that nature, thankfully. And then I would say in the professional world, I've experienced it as well on one occasion that I'll never forget. I had expressed my grievances about something and I had a manager tell me like, don't get defensive. And I was like, I wasn't being defensive. I just, you know, laid out like whatever I said, but it was very much giving like, don't be the angry Black girl. So that was a shock to me because I was just basically laying things out the same way that everyone else did on our team, but I was the only woman of color on that team. So it was very disappointing. And when I decided to leave, I was actually asked like, did you ever feel like marginalized or out of place here? And I said, absolutely. And that was the biggest example that I had to share. I was like, yeah, that was uncalled for. And it's not necessarily something that you should ever say, especially to a coworker of color.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really sorry that that happened. And I wish I could be like, oh, that's never happened to me. Yeah. The first time I've heard that, but it's so common and it's so unfortunate. And you're right. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's so insidious. Colorism, I think, is so embedded in like culture that I think people don't even realize sometimes like what they're saying. Like you say, like you yeah. see them and you're, and that's the problem, right? Like the ability mm-hmm. to be unaware or ignorant yeah. to things is really harmful. So I hope mm-hmm. that like, as we have more conversations like this, that people become more aware and we can start to move the needle so that people just like would never dream of saying something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we're definitely getting there. You know, this was way before the pandemic and like all these extreme movements that we've seen lately. So, you know, I hope that certain people have learned their lessons, but I do know that we definitely still have a long way to go because to this day, I'm still hearing some stories from people, but I do feel very blessed that I feel a lot more comfortable like using my voice at work today for sure.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's great. And I hope I'm curious what you think, but I hope that over time it won't be people like not saying things or not doing things because they're afraid of being in trouble, but that they like genuinely, you know, seek to understand and hear and see people.
Right. Totally.
I hope that we see that shift.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think Gen Z gives us like a little bit of hope there. They're pretty aggressive when it comes to that.
Yeah, yeah. They don't stand for a lot. Like they don't like
no,
a lot
yeah.
It's so funny. I don't know when we became old, but yeah, I learned a lot from them.
I know.
Okay, so when I on a similar note, when you hear me say love your brown skin, what does that mean to you?
I think it means that I'm deserving of being a beauty standard just as much as everyone else is. It also means that we deserve these safe spaces to have these conversations and acknowledge the fact that, you know, we are a big inspiration and an influence to a lot of our non-people of color counterparts. I think, like I said, it definitely gives me the idea that I have a right to be a beauty standard just as much as anyone else does, which a couple of years ago is probably not something that I would have said.
I love that. I feel like that's going to be the quote of the episode. I'm calling it right now. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I definitely feel, I mean, because it's true, like people copy, you know, Black women, Latino women, like all the time, especially in beauty standards, and they try to switch the narrative and say that they're new trends when it's like, no, baby, we've been doing this for decades.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's what was it? Well, there's a lot. I don't know if I should say that now. We'll talk about it later, but you're right. There's a lot of things, and I'm like, this isn't the things I see on TikTok. I'm like, this isn't new. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this for way longer than even like we've been alive. So yeah, it's very interesting. Revisionist history, right? People like to have that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I love that answer. Okay, my next question for you.
Hey there. While you're listening, I want to make sure you're staying connected with us on social. There's so much great content over there, too. Head on over now to @beautyofthenile to join us on Instagram and all social platforms. And join the Beauty of the Nile community Facebook group. super quick, super easy, and totally worth it. We're excited to stay connected and continue to grow the amazing Beauty of the Nile community with you all. Enjoy.
And it's a related one, so it may be a similar answer, but what does being part of the Beauty of the Nile community mean to you?
I think it goes back to what I said, where we deserve to have these safe spaces. It means a lot to me that I can now familiarize myself with other women of color who are putting in the work and, you know, serving our communities and communities beyond that, whether it's, you know, for product recommendations, expertise, or just, you know, knowledge to help other people not be ignorant around us and to learn how to speak to us and move around us and also welcome us into their spaces. I think, you know, the platform just opened my eyes to so many people that I probably wouldn't have like known about otherwise. So I think it's, you know, it's like our own little like library of amazing people.
Oh, I love that too. That was great. If you could speak to the community of listeners, the Beauty of the Nile community, which is a bunch of women of color from all different backgrounds and shades of brown, what would you tell them about their unique beauty? Like, how would you say, this is how I want you to feel about your beauty?
I want you to feel like you are an influence to so many people, no matter if you don't feel that way right now. Isn't there like, there's like that Rihanna quote where it's like, what do you do on the days where you don't feel like your best self? And she's like, pretend. It's like, yeah, always pretend, because whether you believe it or not, you are absolutely an influence and an inspiration to people with your own natural features. You don't feel like you need to change anything about yourself. Like, you really are just perfect the way that you are.
Yeah. And if you fake it long enough, you'll start to believe it.
Exactly. You have to like manifest that you really are like that goddess that we all deserve to be.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, yeah, I always say, I'm like, just, you know, believe in, there are so many people that believe in you. This is what I believe in. I would always say, like, just believe in someone else's belief in you until yours kicks in. So just say
absolutely
positive things, you know, take in positive content, follow positive people, you know, read positive things, and eventually, you know, you will, I think, have no choice but to embody it.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, women always, we doubt ourselves more than men do. And it's like, men wouldn't even hesitate to say how great they are, like what they love the most about themselves. So we shouldn't either.
Yeah. Even when no one asks, they will tell you.
Yeah. So
we should try to do that too, because it seems to, you know, there's something to that.
Yeah.
Okay. My last question for you, I think, if you had to recommend one person for me to interview next, who would it be and why?
Ooh, that is a good question. I know someone. So I have a friend, Casey Gardner. She is in the music industry and she's a tour manager, and she's one of the very few women and like that's in her field. But she's also a Black woman. And, you know, Casey has worked with very, very big musicians just across the board. So I think her experience on that end would be very interesting to hear about, because she has stories just based on what she looks like, her age. She's like, I believe she just turned 30. She's still very young and like so successful in her career. And I think, like, you know, I know it's not beauty, but just switching into like a different space in the entertainment world, just to see how diversity and inclusivity is affected there, would probably be a great one. Yeah. She's awesome.
That's great. I'm definitely, Casey Gardner, you said, right?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely will. I think it's great because I think like beauty doesn't only exist in one space, right? I think entertainment is the place where beauty is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Almost one of the most visible. So I love that suggestion. I will definitely reach out to her. And I've just loved having you today on the Beauty of the Nile podcast.
Oh my gosh, no, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being part of all of this, for being part of the community and the Love Your Brown Skin movement and enriching me today. I feel like I just had a lot of fun with this. And I,
oh my gosh, thank you so much. I had a great time. I'd love to be back for any deeper conversations that we can have. I'm an honest and open book. And, you know, yeah, I mean, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor. It's my first podcast, so I was very excited.
Oh, I didn't know it was your first. You did such a great job.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're like a natural. for anybody who wants to stay connected with you, where can they find you on social media or your writing or whatever?
Yes. So you can find my social media. I'm on Instagram. It's drea.nav. So at drea.nav. And then my writing, you can find it on glamour.com right now. And if you want to see my past writing, you can check out Zoe Report, Teen Vogue, Women's Wear Daily, In Style, and so many other places. Check out my LinkedIn.
Yeah. Or what does Shaq say? Just Google me. If you want to know, you can just Google her. No, I'm kidding, but I'll link those things in the show notes for everybody. And we're over at Beauty of the Nile on Instagram and all social, and beautyofthenile.com. Thanks for listening.
I hope you all have enjoyed this conversation as much as I have. Andrea was an amazing guest. I loved her acknowledgement that we, women of color, all deserve to be and are a beauty standard. Love your brown skin. I also love hearing about her journey to self-love through the love of her brown skin and her natural hair. This is Jasmine Mobley, and you've been listening to the Beauty of the Nile podcast. Beauty of the Nile is your source for wonderful skincare tips, favorite skincare solutions, amazing advice, great conversation, and fabulous beauty inspiration, specifically for women of color, from the experts on skin of color. Love your brown skin. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for more stellar information and a new amazing guest who will be dropping gems. You won't want to miss it. For more great content, head to beautyofthenile.com to sign up for our free newsletter and to be the first to know what's next at Beauty of the Nile. Join us on Instagram and all social channels at Beauty of the Nile. And join our Facebook group, Beauty of the Nile Community. We can't wait to connect and grow with you. Until next week, enjoy life.